This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. There exists in this world a version of swim, bike, and run where you never actually touch pavement. A form of adventure tri, if you will. It's wild, it's tough, it's Xterra, and we're going to learn all about it. Our first guest joining us for this is triathlon legend and TriDot coach McKeely Jones. McKeely started her tri career in 1990 and won two ITU Triathlon World Championships in 1992 and 1993. She won the Xterra Triathlon World Championships in 1996 and won an Olympic silver medal in the Sydney Olympic Games. She became an Ironman World Champion in just her fourth ever full distance Ironman in 2006. And then she won a gold medal at the 2016 Summer Paralympics as a guide for Katie Kelly when paratriathlon made its debut in the Paralympics. McKeely, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on again, Andrew. This is going to be an epic episode. So
yes.
I'm looking forward to discussing all things about getting dirty and off-road.
Also joining us for this dirty and off-road conversation is Andy Blow from Precision Fuel and Hydration. Andy is a sports scientist with a degree in sports and exercise science from the University of Bath. An expert in sweat, dehydration, and cramping, Andy has worked with multiple Formula One racing, NBA, NBL, MLB, and Premier League sports teams, as well as many professional triathletes. An elite-level triathlete in his younger days, Andy has finished in the top 10 of many Ironman events, as well as winning an age group Xterra World title. Andy Blow, how are things over at Precision headquarters today?
All good. Lots of excitement as well for this conversation, for sure.
Well, I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and the captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cooldown. We are thrilled to have Sailfish as the swim partner of TriDot Training. Sailfish was founded in 2007 by Jan Sibbersen, who was on the national German team and is the fastest swimmer to ever hit the waters of Ironman. The Sailfish mission is to create premium triathlon and open water swim products. They offer swim skins, tri suits, and swim accessories. But the core of this Sailfish product line are their award-winning wetsuits. Known for their outstanding flexibility, balanced buoyancy, and distinguished gliding properties in the water, Sailfish wetsuits are truly made to make you faster. And that certainly has been the case for me. I've swam in many different brands of wetsuits over the years, and my Sailfish is the very first one that I put on, got into the water, and clocked swim splits I had no business hitting on my own. For me, it was truly love at first stroke. With several models and price points, there for sure will be a Sailfish wetsuit that is right for you. Head to sailfish.com to check out all the neoprene goodness and use SFC-TRIDOT20 at checkout for 20% off your new wetsuit. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
While we are getting off the beaten path, let's stay off the beaten path for our warm-up question as well. It is not uncommon for multi-sport athletes to have adventurous spirits. Many of us seek out a variety of physical activities in the great outdoors. So Andy, McKeely, from all of your out-in-the-wild adventures, what is the most stunning bit of scenery that you have ever seen? Andy, I'll kick this over to you first. I know you love the great outdoors. What has dropped your jaw lately?
A few years ago, I was lucky enough to be invited to do some cross-country skiing. And I went to a place in Switzerland called Crans Montana. And at the top of the lift there, there's a place called Glacier Plan Mort, which is a huge loop, 10 kilometers of cross-country skiing, up really high. I don't exactly know how high it is. It's got to be like 3,000 or 4,000 meters up. And it is unbelievable. It's like being on the moon. And I was up there on a beautiful blue day with the tracks had just been pieced, so I could ski round, and it was absolutely unforgettable.
Yeah. So Andy, that is a sport I have always wanted to try. Like whenever the Winter Olympics rolls around, I love watching the cross country skiing, the biathlon. Like, I don't know, it fascinates me. I'm born in Florida, now live in Texas. So I don't get a lot of snow to ever try it. So one of these days I gotta travel up north during the wintertime and I know like downhill skiing gets all the excitement and all the buzz, but I've always wanted to try cross country skiing. So that is a great answer. Really cool to hear that. McKaylee Jones, from all of your outdoor wilderness explorations, what is one bit of scenery that was just extraordinarily stunning?
Well, Andrew, I'm ahead of you because I have been cross country skiing once.
Hey,
and it
nice.
Was like, do a lap, get in the warming hut, do a lap, get in the warming hut. But I think one of the coolest things I ever did was called the Nature Games in Brazil. And we actually, the finish line was like literally opposite Iguazu Falls, like wow. Absolutely spectacular, like all around you. It was just amazing that, you know, we're finishing right here at this awesome waterfall called Iguazu Falls. It was just amazing. And we're in the middle of I felt like we're in the middle of nowhere. And then all of a sudden
sure. It's
like,
yeah,
these like beautiful waterfalls. And I believe it's on the, right on the Argentina and Brazilian border.
Okay. That gives me some context. I'm going to Google that, take a look at it. You win a lot of things, McKaylee, and your bio is just a ton of different things you've won. Did you win that race there in Brazil?
Yes, I did. Yes. World Nature Games. Yeah.
God, I need to add that to your bio, a World Nature Games champion as well. So for me, this answer, for my wife and I's travels, most recently we went to Banff National Park in Canada. I think it's one of the most Instagram places in the world, particularly like Moraine Lake there. So we did some hiking in Banff National Park. Moraine Lake, the way you have these massive glacial peaks right up against this crystal blue, kind of powder blue water, with the green evergreen trees all around. It's absolutely stunning. Like my wife and I, we took a canoe out onto the lake, and you're just looking at the scenery in every single direction. There's just these giant white peaks. So it lived up to the hype. We loved that entire trip. We're going to throw this question out to our audience like we always do. I'm curious to hear from all of your travels, all your adventures, what was the one place that you would call the most breathtaking, the most stunning bit of scenery you've laid your eyes on? Every single Monday when the new episode drops, we ask this question in the I Am Trot Up Facebook group. So make sure you're a member of that group. Find the post asking you this question, and bonus points for pictures on this one.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders, powered by Live Steady, deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel my workouts with the orange-flavored Edge Gel and the unflavored UCAN Energy Powder. Between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a Live Steady product that you will love. So head to their website, UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. Now, that code used to be 10%, but the fine folks at UCAN have upped it to 20% for TRIDOT Nation. So once again, that's UCAN.co, promo code TRIDOT. As a very small portion of the triathlon calendar, Xterra racing is a niche corner of a somewhat niche sport. There are for sure more Ironman finishers on this planet than Xterra finishers. So lucky for us, we have two Xterra world champions on the episode to tell us all about this off-road form of swim, bike, and run. So Andy, McKaylee, I'm curious for both of you, what drew you to this race format in the first place? McKaylee.
Originally I did do a little bit of mountain biking, and there was at that time because at the Atlanta Olympics, we're going to have a mountain bike race. I did have someone from the Australian Federation sort of chasing me down, asking me if I wanted to do that. And I'm like, I don't have the skill level for that racing. I mean, it definitely takes a certain level of skill, that's for sure. And then when they announced Xterra, I just happened to be at a time in my career where I needed something different and I had taken a little bit of time off. And I'm like, well, you know, I've done a couple of mountain bike races, you know, and I had total respect for the mountain bikers because I knew how good they were technically.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Xterra is not just technical technique on the bike. It's also the running. Because the trails they use, it's like, they're tough trails. It's not the easiest terrain to run on. And I think that's what's so appealing about Xterra. It's not just a swim, bike and run. It's challenging in all aspects. And, you know, I think I was just lucky enough that I got to do the first ever Xterra World Championships. And I think I passed the first person to take over the lead with about 200 meters left to run. So it came down to the wire, but like I definitely loved the experience. I think the only thing for me, you know, being a little bit more of a purist in terms of being in triathlon, because I was doing the ITU circuit, the Olympics was coming up. It's like my one thing, I crash a lot. So that's the one thing that like made it like tough for me to continue. It's like, you know, I needed to enhance my skill a little bit better. And then being a little bit competitive, it's like, uh-oh. But no, like loved the whole experience and, you know, very happy I could tick that off my to-do list.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about some of those skills our triathletes need to develop if they are going to take on Xterra in just a little bit. Andy, for you, what first drew you to this race format?
Yeah, I was doing triathlon I started doing triathlon in sort of mid-1990s and was a junior then and had my sights set. When they announced that the triathlon was going to be in the Olympics, I thought, that's what I want to do. And, you know, I sort of started training with the national squad at the University of Bath in the UK. And it pretty quickly, within a couple of years, I think I'd realized that although I was not bad as an athlete, Great Britain was super, super strong at that time. I was not going to be one of the guys who was going to get selected to go to the games. And so I wanted to keep doing triathlon and I wanted to stay excited about it. And around about the same time, I'd done some work experience working for a Formula One racing team, doing the driver training for them. And we were taking the guys to do quite a lot of biking and quite a lot of mountain biking at times. So I started to have a dabble with that. I had access to some really good mountain bikes and I went and thought, I'll have a go at a few of these races, like how it looks a lot of fun and kind of how hard can it be? And you find out pretty quickly how hard it can be when you used to ride sure. a time trial bike on the road and you think, oh, I've ridden a mountain bike a few times, you know, this, but like McCooley said, it's tough. But I got really into it for a year or two and ended up going out in 2000 to do the Xterra Worlds because we had a round back then. They've only just brought it back, but we had a round of Xterra in the UK. It was literally about 50 miles from where I was living. So I could just drive down there, do the race, managed to get a slot, and then got to go out to Maui to do the World Championships out there. And it was everything it promised to be. It was so good. And it kept me interested in the sport at a time when I was kind of not sure, you know, what the future in the sport would be for me.
Oh, gotcha. Very interesting. So I mentioned at the top of the show in both of your bios, every time you both come on, I mentioned your world title in this race format. For McKeely, it was overall champion. Andy, for you, it was age group. I think the 20 to 24 age group is what you won that year, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I was one of the youngsters.
just one of the babies in the field that time. So I'm curious to hear just kind of the story of that day. Let's kind of travel back in time and McKeely, tell us all about the day that you became Xterra World Champion. What do you remember from that race?
Well, you know, I always like to have a race within the race. So there was always some bets with some of the other competitors.
That sounds like you.
It was a technical course and like you know, the technical aspect of it was also sort of doubled because, you know, you're on volcanic rock. So I actually had crashed a couple of days before the race. So I already had some skin off. And, you know, back then, you know, tri suits weren't as popular as they are now. So just had like a one piece bathing suit. But I did have gloves. I'm like, I'm going to make sure I have gloves and a bathing suit. They were my options. And, you know, I was lucky enough that I was sponsored by a really good mountain bike brand at the time. So I had like all the gear and no idea, basically.
Sure, but no, yeah.
It was funny because a lot of the triathletes were saying, oh, we're going to crush the mountain bikers. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure they're going to crush us on this technical course.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, I had a great swim. It was in the ocean. Even though I have been rescued before in like surf one time in Australia. But, you know, I really love when it, you know, you get a little bit of surf. And then got out on the bike and it was just a waiting game, like just seeing when I was going to get passed by some of the mountain bike girls. And, you know, it was just for me, it was all about, you know, taking the technical aspects of the course as fast as I could. Like, it was so funny because I was like scooting past a couple of the professional men and they're like, McKeely, be careful. You're going to hurt yourself. I'm like, I'm not going that hard compared to what the mountain bike gals will be going. So, you know, it's always interesting that different perspective. But like what I liked about the Xterra course that I remember, it was just, there was everything. There was like ups, downs. You had like a lot of volcanic rock as well. So, and then you had to go over like tree roots and like little tree logs. And, you know, it was super fun. And the thing about mountain biking, it's sort of a little bit like if you ever have done motocross, you get that arm pump burn.
Yeah.
So like you're hanging for dear life, but at some point you can't hang on anymore. So, you know, you've got to let loose because, you know, your hands are just so blown, your wrist is so blown up. And I just remember like coming into the long straight into transition for the run. I'm like, yes, now the run. And, you know, the run was challenging as well. You know, it was like you're ducking underneath trees, you're jumping over logs. It was twisty as turny. And then, you know, you had some really good up and down sections. And then, of course, you hit the beach. But I actually grew up running, doing a lot of racing on the beach. So I love the beach. I love running on the beach. And literally as soon as I got on the beach, I saw that I was almost in the lead. So I gave everything I could to
drop the hammer,
to catch up. And like, yeah, literally it was like a couple of second victory. But like I was pretty tired after the race, you know, one of the hardest races you can do in that amount of time, just because it's so anaerobic and your heart rate is so high and you've just got to keep pushing. And then it's high because, you know, that fear factor on the bike as well. So there's no real time where you can really chill the whole time, like mentally and physically, you're on your game the whole time. But, you know, when I look back, I'm like, you know what? I'm glad I did it. Definitely like happy that I crossed the line and I won. But, you know, they're challenging races. And that's the sort of racing that I like, though. You know, that's long enough but short enough that, you know, it's intense and you can go pretty much as hard as you need to go.
Like, I enjoy trail running. I last time Andy Blow was in Dallas, Texas, he and I went for a nice little trail run around the lakes here in North Texas. And I like trail running for about 7-8 miles. And then after that, I just want to get back on a road. I'm sick of having to pay attention, like, to everything I do. And it sounds like on both the mountain bike and the run, you just constantly have to be aware of what you're doing. I love the comparison to motocross. My brother and I used to ride dirt bikes in Central Florida where we grew up when we were teenagers. He was amazing at it. I just tried to keep up with him in the woods without hitting a tree. But yeah, like it works all these different like control muscles in your wrists. On a dirt bike, it's your thumb. Like my thumb would wear out just from pressing the accelerator. But it works all these little control muscles that just being in a time trial aero position for 112 miles on a straight road doesn't work. So yeah, very interesting to hear all of that. Andy, for you, winning that age 20 to 24 age group as a youngster from the UK, what was your experience like in Maui racing the world championships?
It was unbelievable. Everything about the trip was unbelievable. It was my first time going to Hawaii, so that, you know, in itself is mind blowing. The day you get there and jump in the ocean and go for a swim, and this is just insane. It was incredible. So I was just high on life when I arrived, and I do remember going out and scoping out some of the biking in the days leading up, because I'd never ridden on that kind of lava rock and stuff. And I came off quite an innocuous, just little fall, and absolutely got shredded. It's like falling on razor blades. It's unreal, so painful. And I learned a good lesson there, and had to get patched up. And I think in the race photos, I've got kind of, you know, you can see all down one of my knees is all, half the skin's missing, but that was pretty valuable to learn. And then in the race itself, it was the most memorable thing, which was pretty nasty actually, was I was racing, there's a big climb and you get up to the top, and then there's a fast descent, which is along over the lava rock and stuff. And yeah, I can see Makili sort of like nodding her head thinking, yeah, because this guy in front of me, I think it was a German lad who was in my age group as well, and we were racing pretty close, and he was ahead of me, and he took a nasty tumble and really, like, he went over the handlebars, and on that kind of rock, I thought, well, that's, you know, he's not coming back from that. And I saw him later on after the race and saw how badly his back was cut up and that sort of thing. So that was definitely baked into my brain. I also remember that for weeks ahead of it, I'd been reading all about the race in magazines and talking to people, and everyone said how many punctures you're likely to get because of the massive thorns that they have there. And I think one of the reasons I did okay in the race was I just skated through without a single puncture. And there's a really high rate of people getting punctures in that race. So I was just very fortunate. And I did put new tires on for the race just to be doubly sure. But, you know, you can't kind of protect yourself entirely from those kind of things. And that seemed to work. And so I managed to finish without a puncture. And then the other thing that I remember is at one point on the run, having come over from the UK, it was in October, I'd not been training in the heat. I was not ready for the heat or used to the heat. I was boiling over on the run. And there was a guy there watering, you know, his lawn with his hose pipe towards the end of the run. And I actually stopped and grabbed his hose pipe and put it down my top. It's never felt so good after that. And yeah. And then the final thing that really made it for me, as part of the prize winning the age group, we were given a ticket to go in a helicopter around the island. You know, you have a helicopter tour around.
Oh yeah, cool.
Flew over the rainforest bit, over the lava flows, flew over Jaws, the big surf break that was, you know, where there's some epic waves. And yeah, it was hands down one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Yeah, very, very cool. It's very telling that for both of you, you lost a fair amount of skin off of your body before you even got to the start line of that Xterra. Just in the days leading up and reconning the course, you both lost some skin and fell. And great stories there. Congrats to you both on that win.
Andrew, I think one of the best prizes I ever got was from Xterra, that I got a year's supply of Paul Mitchell hair products.
Hey, nice. Yeah. I don't need those, but good for you. But both of you could certainly benefit from that. So coming into this conversation, I have heard of the Xterra World Championships. I actually watched it on TV one time. That's the race that we're all talking about, with you both winning in Maui. I know there are two Xterra races in my neck of the woods here in Texas, but those are the only ones that I'm aware of. The World Championships in Maui, and one in Waco and one in Dallas. That's the list I'm familiar with. What are the significant Xterra races out there, and how can an athlete find one near them? Andy Blow.
The one that I did to qualify for the World Championships years ago was Xterra Great Britain, and that's been absent for a number of years, but that has just been brought back this year. So as nice. We're cool. talking, it was on about 2 weeks ago. Alistair Brownlee showed up and showed everyone how to do it, which was really good. And they're really making a push to bring that one back. So I think that if you're, and Europe has become quite a scene for it. There was, for quite a few years, there was a French guy, Nick Lebrun. He was a duathlete and Xterra racer. And as I think partly because of his success, but just also because of the terrain they've got, there have historically been some fantastic Xterra races in France. The World Championships have moved to Italy in recent years. I think they're in Italy again this year in September. So I think from the European perspective, there's lots of options. And although Xterra is the brand that everyone knows, I've certainly raced over the years. I raced a lot of, you know, non-Xterra branded kind of, you know, off-road duathlons, off-road triathlons. We had a big series of off-road duathlons through the winter in the UK, which were kind of like training races. So they would just be one or two mile first run, like 10 or 12 miles on the mountain bike, and a 2 or 3 mile second run. And they were always really popular. So I think, you know, if you, they're a little bit, they've never really become fully mainstream, but they're out there if you go looking for them.
Yeah, very interesting. I know that trail running is, and ultra running is very big in Europe compared to the States. And you get big crowds at the popular European trail races. And so that, I guess that kind of makes sense that that adventurous spirit translates to off-road triathlon over in Europe. And also very interesting to hear that the World Championships have been moved from Maui to Italy. I did not know that. McKeely, what is the Xterra scene in the United States looking like these days?
Yeah, so definitely you can like do a search. The Xterra website has like a bunch of races in different regions. And of course, you know, if the big goal is to qualify for the World Championships, you know, you have to qualify. You know, we have to qualify just like in Ironman to get to Kona. And that's exactly the same process when it comes to Xterra. And, you know, basically you'll see that there are communities that support the Xterra races. Got to find lake access or some type of water access and mountain bike access. So, you know, they are out there, and definitely I would put it on my bucket list, you know, in different regions, as I said, around the country, you can find some Xterra races. And like I said earlier, I've done some races that aren't Xterra branded, and they're duathlons as well. So there are ways to do it. And, you know, the thing about that I love about mountain biking, it's really good for skill development for any level athlete. Put yourself out there, go and do something that you never thought that you could do, because there are different levels of Xterra racing. You know, you just have to like work out the type of terrain that you want to go. Obviously, the World Championships is going to be like the max in terms of experience level. Like, you know, you definitely need a good level of experience, but, you know, it's amazing what you can do if you put your mind to it. And just that little bit of skill just helps your overall triathlon. And, you know, who doesn't want to get out and run on the trails and get out and bike on the trails?
So let's talk about just the races themselves. I mean, as you kind of bounce from Xterra to Xterra, all these different off-road races. And Andy, very interesting to hear. I mean, really just like road triathlon. I mean, there's Ironman, there's Challenge Family, there's Clash Endurance, but there's also off-brand races, local races that are excellent, great options. So very cool to hear that in the off-road triathlon market, there's Xterra, but then there's also local options that athletes can tap into and find. What are these races like? What are the courses like? What kind of terrain can athletes expect to encounter? And I'm really curious, what are the distances like? I can't imagine doing 140.6 miles on a mountain bike off road. So Andy, tell us about these races. What can we expect to get into?
You can expect a lot of variety. The only thing that's vaguely similar with all of them is the swim, usually. And even that can be different, because obviously some will be ocean. Ocean swims probably rarer, because getting like good mountain bike access from the beach is potentially more rare. But so often you'll be swimming in a lake, because you'll be in a park, or you'll be in a woodland type setting or something like that. But once you get on the bike, it could literally be anything. I've ridden off-road triathlons that have been multiple laps of a really short track, sort of smooth, fast, but twisty and technical mountain bike circuit, through to ones that do a massive loop where you're going essentially up a huge climb and down the other side and back around, you know, in down in the Alps or whatever. So lots and lots of variety. And one of the key things actually about success, and not just success for racing, but like success in terms of enjoying your race, is to do your homework about what the course is like. Because when you're a novice mountain biker, you probably assume, okay, well, I need tires with grip, and I need, you know, that and certain gear ratios. Like the reality is, the nuance of things like tire choice and tire pressure whether you ride a full suspension or a front suspension or even a rigid bike, are really quite important when it comes to the mountain biking side of things, because the wrong, even the right bike with the wrong setup can make a huge difference. If you, you know, I'll freely admit, when I started riding a mountain bike and going to mountain bike races, I was shocked because I would pump my tires up pretty much as hard as they could go, because surely that was faster, you know. And then you look at the people, and in mountain biking, it's like a thing that people do is go around squeezing other people's tires because everyone's paranoid about what pressure they should be running. And it's sort of, it's like the little test or how, and you realize that these people have got little pressure gauges that tell you the difference between four and five PSI to see how they should be running the tires. Because if it's, you know, if it's dry and dusty and you want more grip, you might run them a little bit softer and you might harden them up if it's a bit rocky so you don't get pinch flats, but you don't want to make them too hard because you get too much vibration. You can get things like, if you run on a fast mountain bike course, if you run something called a semi-slick tire, which is essentially like a low tread tire down the middle, and it's got really much more grip around the corners for when you're leaning the bike over, the difference in rolling resistance can be, I would liken it to whether you're sat on the wheel on a road bike or whether you're sat out into the wind. It can make that much of a difference in the wattage output. So whilst you don't have to suddenly become a complete bike geek, you do need to understand tire pressures. Tire selection, I would say, is probably the number one thing to understand. The second thing to understand is how to set suspension up for your body weight. So a lot of bikes with suspension forks have air pressure pumps that, so you have chambers that you set to your body weight and to the dynamics of the riding. And these days as well, with a little bit more choice in gear ratios, it's making sure you've got adequate gearing for whatever the course throws at you. It's one thing running out of gears on steep descents when you don't need to pedal, but it's another thing just running out of gears going up. You need to have the appropriate ratios for your level of ability. Because you get those things wrong and you are bringing a knife to a gunfight, really.
Yeah, it sounds like the bike setup and tire selection and all that is almost more important here than it is at a triathlon race. I'm a very timid mountain bike rider myself, but I do somewhat enjoy it for a little bit from time to time. And I know nothing about the specific setup and the tire choices you can have and all that. So yeah, go talk to your local bike shop, go pick the brain of that one local triathlete in your tri club that does Xterra. And make sure, okay, when I roll up to my first Xterra race, I've got a setup that has me ready for success. So great stuff there, Andy. Michele, is that much something that you know much about, or did you kind of rely on the mechanics around you to get your setup right for you?
No, definitely it was a part of like the mechanics, but then you also have to know what you like in the end too. Like when I was racing, you had the choice of a couple of things, you know, front suspension, and then they started doing the dual suspension. And as I said, you know, I ran into problems with the dual suspension because they made it too soft for the type of course I was riding. So that was like super, super frustrating. The other thing that I love about the mountain bike scene, how much that technology has crossed over to triathlon. Like we have the disc brakes, we have the one by, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, the tubeless tires, you know, all that sort of stuff like has really come from that mountain bike scene. And it's so awesome to see it like coming into triathlon. And yeah, like the technical aspect of mountain biking, yeah, like you do definitely need some knowledge, you know, that knowledge of how the equipment works, and definitely tire pressure is huge. I mean, but you know, even these days, it's like, you know, back in the day, you know, on a tri bike, you'd pump your tires up as high as you could go. And now with tubeless, it's totally different. You know, you can get away with, you know, 60 to 80 PSI rather than like over 100 PSI. So yeah, I think, you know, knowledge is valuable, particularly, you know, on a technical course, because, you know, if it's a wet course to a dry course to a rocky course to volcanic rock type of course, you know, all those experiences are important, because like, as I said, you know, it transfers over to all of triathlon.
I'm curious to hear beyond the bikes. There's other gear selection, I'm sure, that is different between the helmets and the cycling shoes and the running shoes and When you roll up to an Xterra race, obviously you're on a mountain bike and not a road bike or tri bike. What else is different about the gear selection that our triathlete audience should be aware of if they're interested in tackling Xterra?
I think with the running is probably the next obvious one after the bike, in that a bit like with the cycling, you've got to select your shoes for the course, but you're going to predominantly want some kind of off-road running shoes. So check the Vaporflies at the door and get a little bit more grip.
And stability.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I used to probably take, if I hadn't been to the place, like when I went out to Maui, I did take a couple of different pairs of shoes with me because I just had no idea what would
function. Yeah, just to feel it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if it's dry, like in Maui, you could almost, a road shoe's not going to be optimal, but you'd kind of get away with it because the dry means there's grip. But I've raced races in Europe or in the UK where you've been in slippy woodland when it's rained, and then you need a full fell running shoe with really deep lugs and those kind of things. So, and McKeely brought this one up earlier as well, which is a really smart one, but I would say most of the time you're going to want to wear gloves on the bike. One, just because if you've got soft triathlete hands, you know,
yeah,
you haven't done all of the
delicate
hard yard,
hands,
right, then yeah, you're going to need to protect them a bit. But also, if you come off, which is way more likely on a mountain bike than a robot, obviously the first thing you do is put your hands out, and it can save you a lot of pain and a lot of lost skin if you do that. The only other one, which again probably quite obvious, but footwear wise, I have seen people do this, but you don't put road shoes and road pedals on a mountain bike because, you know, almost certainly there'll be, if it's a vaguely technical course, there'll be a point that you've got to unclip. So mountain bike shoes have recessed cleats, usually kind of SPD cleats or something that are up inside the sole of the shoe with a grip around it. So, and they have maybe even some of the less racier shoes have a little bit more flex in the sole. So that if you've got to run in the shoes, then and push the bike, you can do so without damaging the cleats, because, you know, trying to see someone in carbon tri shoes with look pedals running up a steep muddy slope is, you know, it's good for the YouTube videos, but not
good for a laugh. Yeah. is the helmet any different for mountain biking as opposed to road cycling?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's the same sort of technology, but, you know, you'll have a visor normally on a mountain bike. And, you know, I think the other thing is, like, you know, you're off your bike a lot as well. So those mountain bike shoes just give a little bit more than like a tri shoe. But yeah, the helmet is, I mean, there are mountain bike helmets. You're not going to get on and wear a full aero helmet for sure. Nobody does that. Everyone, you know, has mountain bike helmets. I mean, they have a purpose, and usually they have a little visor to protect your face a little bit more as well. And then, you know, I think the main thing is also what you wear, because, you know, you don't want to be doing it in your swimsuit, because you need like a tri-suit is much more functionally better really than even a normal triathlon, because if you come off, you do want a little bit of a layer that hopefully you can protect your skin a little bit as well. And, you know, sunglasses are important as well. And then like gloves, as we talked about, the gloves is a big one, you know, because you do want to protect your hands if you fall off. And, you know, if you hit something as well, you know, you're going to protect your hand a little bit.
Yeah, I know from my mountain bike friends that I have, the transition lenses on the sunglasses are really popular in mountain biking, it seems like, because you're going in and out of the trees a lot more. And so just having that lens, you know, when you're road cycling and you start off first thing in the morning, you can have your sunnies in your back pocket, and as the sun comes up, you can put them on. But for mountain biking, you're constantly going in and out of the shade, in and out of trees. And so having a lens darken and brighten for you is super helpful. So that's a next level tip that I know. Yeah.
Yeah. And the dirt that can get in your eyes very easily if it's dusty, or if you're riding behind someone and they're tracking up rocks and stones and dirt as well. So it's like a visual and a protection component as well.
Yeah, the other thing I've just thought of as well that I remembered is I definitely raced in a few Xterra races with a hydration backpack on the bike.
Yeah,
because unlike a regular triathlon, there may well not be a bottle handoff on the on the bike. So a lot of mountain bikes have only one bottle cage on them. Even if they do have two, you might not want to take two because the risk of them bouncing out is pretty high. And the other thing is, especially if you're not as confident a bike handler or the course is really technical, there might be really long stretches where you can't take your hands off the bars to drink. But if you can put the tube from a hydration pack in your mouth and kind of hold it there, then you can drink whenever you like. And unlike a mountain bike race, you might be on the bike for 2 hours in Exterra or an hour and a half, but that's not the end of it. You've got to get off and run for 40 minutes, yeah, an hour, whatever. So you've not got a great chance to hydrate and take energy in when you're doing that.
So yeah, no, great idea. Because I mean, certainly there's no aero penalty, you know, on a mountain bike for having that hydration backpack on. It can serve you well in the run. Those are obviously very popular in the trail run community. So Camelback and several other brands have excellent, excellent lightweight options for holding fluids on your back during mountain biking and trail running. So great addition there, Andy. Michele, I'm curious to hear from you on this as the TriDot coach on this episode. We have TriDotters do Exterra races throughout the year. TriDot training can absolutely get you ready for an Exterra race. But you have to know that the terrain is different. The muscle recruitment is different. Probably takes beefing up those strong muscles in the legs a little bit more. So as a TriDot coach, what would you tell an athlete to do just to kind of tweak their training to prep properly for the terrain of an Exterra event?
I mean, obviously, you know, you've got to still train very similar systems. I mean, definitely the top end, you're probably going to work a little bit or more on high cadence as well as like doing some of that strength endurance work that you need for climbing. So I think that's like, you know, and even on the run, you know, it's like putting some of those runs off road, doing like some intervals on the hills. So you are used to like varied terrain, you know, working on some steeper climbs, working on some downhill technique. I definitely add like a skill workout where, you know, you are practicing. Like one thing I used to do, I would, you know, find one hill that I could sort of go up and down on and practice, you know, sliding in to the turn, you know, turning around and then low speed, getting back up to speed, and then also getting on and off your bike. Because, you know, a lot of the times in these Exterra races, you are getting on and off the bike. So I think that technical aspect of making sure that you are comfortable getting on and off your bike and getting on your bike when, you know, you're in the middle of a hill, because sometimes, yeah, you have to do that as well. So there's definitely like, I think the skill level is like super important because, you know, that's something that you really need to work on. But, you know, in terms of like the training, the different energy systems, I mean, it is a time trial, you know, because your heart rate is going to be high, but it's like your heart rate's going to be varied because, you know, even on the downhill, you know, it will be a little bit higher than typically because of the adrenaline and just the mental focus. So definitely, you know, doing that, those type of workouts are super important, you know, because sometimes you're going to be on a long climb. Sometimes you're going to be on a short, steep climb. Sometimes, you know, you've got to quickly jump off your bike and because you just can't climb anymore. And you jump off and then you got to get back on. So, you know, your heart rate is constantly spiking up and down the entire time. So it's really important that your body gets used to that lactic acid. I always tell people like lactic acid is your frenemy. So you should definitely utilize that system because it's like evil, but it's good because if you can get that lactic acid buffer bigger and bigger, you know, that's really going to help you in all types of terrain.
You talk about those bike skills. Are there any other skills that we need to brush up on that aren't tied to fitness? I love the suggestion of practicing getting on and off the bike because there's going to be times where you're going up a hill and you hit a rock and your momentum stalls and you got to hop off the bike and run up the hill. How do we go about practicing those skills? Is it just finding terrain and just working on it over and over again? Is there ways we can be intentional with that? If somebody lives somewhere where maybe they don't have, maybe they are racing in Maui, Hawaii, where there's lava rock and they don't live where there's lava rock, what is the best ways to go about developing the technical skills that it will take to take on Exterra?
Well, you know, if you don't live in an area that has like the technical aspects, it's like you can put a block of wood out and learn how to get your front wheel over and your back wheel over. I mean, there's lots of creative, you know, jumping up and off a curb. You know, that's like developing a skill that you will need. It's like, you know, learning the relationship between your front brake and your back brake, you know, setting up a little bit of cone course. So, you know, that part of it, you know, you can be super creative of, you know, whether it's just throwing out a block of wood or going up and down some curves, that's going to help you as well.
I think you've got that training side of it, but then what I found most beneficial actually when I started doing Xterra and wanted to do a little bit better at it was I showed up at some local mountain bike races and got stuck in, you know, because
I did that
putting
as well.
Yourself in that competitive pressured environment
that's
where you're
good.
Going to face different terrain is I think that's probably the ultimate way to prepare. The difficulty is, especially if you've been even a halfway decent athlete at triathlon in general, you might turn up there and expect to do pretty well. And that's going to lead to an ego check, a bit of disappointment. Because the contribution that skill makes to the whole equation, like McKee's been alluding to, is so high. I remember the first mountain bike race I did and just being completely humbled. And then as long as you can kind of get over that, it's a really good way to throw yourself into a competitive environment and learn on the job, because you'll be bumping wheels with people. The other thing is as well, probably the best thing that comes from that is riding behind riders that are faster than you downhill, because you get to see the lines that they take. You get to see how they move their body on the bike and distribute their weight. And one of the best tips that I was ever given when someone tried to help me was telling me where to look, because when you're a bit nervous and scared, you look far too close in front of the front wheel, or you look at all the things that you're scared about hitting, which only increases
your
chance of riding into them. Whereas what you've got to do is relax, sit up, look ahead, as when you're driving a car, the faster you're going, the further down the road you want to be looking. And then when you're going into a corner, you want to set yourself up, look at where you want to be going, and then your posture changes. Rather than looking at where you'll be in the next 2 seconds, you want to look at where you're going to be in a few seconds time, because you set yourself up for it. And all of those things, I think, only come with repetitive practice and with a bit of relaxation, learning to be relaxed on the bike. Because when you're not relaxed on the bike, not only are you likely to crash more, you're going to burn twice the energy you need to, because you make everything hard work, because you're banging into things. You're not smoothly flowing over the ground. You're just making it hard work. Yeah. So getting into a race kind of puts all of that out there, I think, and will bring you on faster than anything else.
Yeah. And I imagine that's the case for trail running as well. You know, jump into a couple of trail run specific events and learn from those trail runners, watch the way they pace themselves going up and down those hills, watch the way they, you know, go handle and glide over certain forms of terrain, rocks, roots, etc. I imagine too, Andy, if you're following a more experienced mountain biker up and down a hill, listen for when they change gears and hear those, you know, like watch the way they anticipate. It's very difficult to change gears in the middle of a pedal stroke on an uphill effort. So you have to kind of anticipate those gear shifts when you're on such varied terrain. So that's another thing you can learn. Great suggestion there. And very similar when we did our podcast episode a few months back on swim run with coach Rhea Usher was on that episode, which Andy, I know you're good friends with Rhea over there in the UK. She's one of our great Tri-Dot coaches through Precision Coaching over there in London. That was one thing that she suggested to aspiring aquabike athletes, was jump into some swim specific events and jump into some bike time trial events, because it will really help you learn how to just go all out on the bike in a time trial, because that's what you're doing in aquabike. Very, very, very similar here, Andy, with that suggestion. So I love that. What tips would you have for a competitive athlete who's looking for a good result? They don't just want to show up, participate. They want to show up and podium and win. What is the race strategy involved in racing Xterra? What would you say, McKeely?
Well, you know, the race strategy is like, it depends on the course as well. Like you got to...
Don't fall down, don't puncture.
Well, it's also positioning, right? Because you don't want to get caught behind somebody who's slower on like the descents if you're a much faster descender, because that's going to slow you down. But I mean, I think the main thing is it's like the skill level. I mean, you're going to have an engine. If you're a good athlete, you have the engine. I still think that that skill level is the biggest thing, you know, knowing the course, knowing what you're going to face, like every meter of that course is super helpful, like knowing the lines, like riding before the race, those difficult lines and, you know, getting that nice flow that Andy talked about. I mean, that's super important because you can gain so much just by being super smooth on the courses. And, you know, even the running, you know, it's a type of run. It's not just like you go out and run as fast as you can. It's technical. So like choosing like good shoes based on the conditions, you know, knowing the course a little bit as well, because, you know where the rocks are going to be, you know where you can put pressure on people. And, you know, nutrition is key as well. I mean, that's another huge factor if you want to do well. It's like, because, you know, there are less opportunities, especially on the bike, to get that nutrition down, but it's still a couple of hours of racing. So, you know, making sure you do know what your numbers are based on, you know, the sweat testing you can get, because, you know, if you're in a place like Hawaii, it's super hot and humid. And, you know, and then you got to look at that cold weather nutrition as well, where you may not be drinking as much, that you need like calories in some other type of source. So, you know, all those sort of things, I don't think it changes too much whether you want to be an elite level athlete at regular triathlon or off-road triathlon. I think the biggest difference is that skill choice and equipment choice.
Yeah, Andy, one of the things Michele mentioned, obviously, is the importance of nutrition, which we know that's the case in all endurance sports. I'm curious in the case studies that you've done with Precision. I know that you study trail runners. I know you've studied Xterra athletes. I know you study, you know, regular road triathletes. Are you guys seeing Xterra triathletes and mountain bikers and trail runners do anything different in their hydration and nutrition than regular road triathlon, or is the approach very much the same? Just know your numbers and hit them.
That's the core of the approach. But where it changes when you're racing off road is you can't always eat and drink when you want to and what you want to. So you end up being forced into maybe on a mountain bike course, if you're doing a pure mountain bike race, it's not unusual for there to be pretty savage technical sections and then some long open climbs or a more flatter sweeping section where you've got to try and do all of your eating and drinking in a very condensed period of time. I definitely remember doing one of my early mountain bike races and partly through fear and partly through just completely forgetting, I didn't touch my drink bottle the yeah. whole way around. Race for an hour and a half, and I realize at the end, why am I so thirsty and feeling like I'm blowing up? Well, it's because I haven't touched a drop, because I've been so focused. And so that's all part of building experience and stuff, but you need to have a bit more of a flexible plan. And, you know, for instance, I figured out that probably I needed to have more liquid calories in a Xterra because I wasn't going to be fishing around for gels in my pockets quite as much as I would be prepared to on the road. And don't underestimate, carb loading is really important for any race, but for a race like an Xterra, if it's like 2.5-3 hours, whatever, carb loading can get you a long way, is a really good performance advantage by getting that right beforehand. So I think that just making sure that your strategy incorporates the vagaries of the difficulty of eating and drinking on the trails is important. It's another reason actually why having the hydration bladder on your back is a great idea, because if it's hot and dry, that's good because you're going to drink a lot. If it's wet and muddy, your bottle on your bike gets caked in mud and dirt very quickly and is very unappealing to drink out of. And you end up squirting a lot of it away as you're trying to clean the nozzle. And you might even, you know, I've used an entire bottle of drink in a race to like unclog the rear mech if it's covered in mud. Because whilst not drinking is going to slow me down, my wheel not turning is going to slow me down even more. I'm trying to prioritize and sacrifice the drink you know, to clear out the thing. That's one of the big things about the nutritional side of it. Probably having something like a bottle and some gels and things in your transition bag or in your transition area, so that you accept you're going to be doing a little bit more eating and drinking at the start of the run, because at least you're in control of that. You know, you can run out with a bottle, you can run out with some gels, eat them, and just getting used to that. And then it's not so much to do with the eating and drinking, but the other thing that came to my mind when you were talking about being competitive at this, or certainly maybe this is just a confession from my own racing, but I always used to think on the mountain bike that being from a triathlon background, so where like fitness was probably higher than the average others in the field, but technical skill was lower, I would try and tactically use that by getting ahead of people on climbs and obviously making the most of working really hard on those. And I'm not afraid to sit in front of someone on a descent and hold them up, because if it's really narrow track, they can get really angry, but they can't get by you.
It's a race. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of neutralize their superpower.
It's funny. It's funny that you say that, because I was in a mountain bike race once, and like, literally they were trying to shove me off the side of the trail because there was no room to pass. And I'm like, hey, I was trying to get past you on the climbs and you didn't get out of my way. I'm not getting out of the way on the downhill. Sorry.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. That's the triathlete when it comes to mountain biking. Get in the way on the descents and blast by people on the climbs. So I think there's a little bit more tactics like that. And I guess the other one on the fitness side, which Michele has definitely talked about, is that kind of the training the power on, power off sort of systems, where you do a little bit more hill repeats and those kind of things, because it's never going to be a smooth effort. If you have a good Ironman race on a flat course, you can put out a very smooth and steady effort all day and you don't need to go too near the red zone. Whereas in an Xterra, you're definitely going into the red zone multiple times. And if you haven't trained those energy systems, that's very costly.
In an Ironman, right, you're always talking about don't burn the matches, but in an off-road triathlon, you're burning a lot of matches, so you've got to get your body used to that.
Yeah, I know in the Tread-Out workout catalog that there are some bike workouts like 30-30s, 30-90s, where it is short burst, intense efforts, MAV shuttles on the run, where you're sprinting all out for 20 seconds, short burst efforts. So maybe if you're working with a Tread-Out coach like Michele Jones, she can fire up a few extra of those type of workouts for you, knowing you're getting ready for an Xterra event, that's for sure. So in the end, after all this talk and conversation, who is Xterra for? I mean, do you think every triathlete, if you enjoy triathlon, you will probably enjoy Xterra, you should give it a go? Or do you have to have like a certain edge to your personality to truly enjoy an Xterra? Michele, what do you think?
Well, I think if you do decide to do an Xterra, the number one thing is choose a course that's to your level and ability, because there are some off-road triathlons that, like, you know, if you aren't super skilled, you know, they're on like big fire trails roads. So, you know, it's not as hard as like some of the other more technical. So I think like the type of athlete, it's like, hey, enjoy, if you enjoy the outdoors, if you want to like push your skill level a little bit more, I definitely think that's the type of athlete, you know, but it definitely somebody who's very skilled on the bike, who's very comfortable. I mean, they're the ones that are going to really excel at that type of racing.
People sometimes go through phases with triathlon where you start out and triathlon is the new thing for you, and so it's quite exciting and adventurous regardless. And then maybe when I started doing it, I was getting a little, just showing those first signs of being a little bit jaded with doing normal road triathlon. So I wanted the next hit, you know, what was the next most interesting thing. And so maybe it's a good time to do it is if you're finding yourself getting a little bit stale with regular road triathlons, or you've kind of plateaued out. There's a lot less emphasis on, you know, everyone knows what a 9:30 Ironman means, or a 10:15 Ironman, or whatever. There, it's kind of a standard. It doesn't really matter in Xterra because the courses are so different. So if you're looking to revitalize your interest in endurance or multi-sport, it may be a good time to do it. But you have got to be ready to embrace a lot more a lack of predictability. You're far more likely to have mechanical problems that could result in you not finishing. You're more likely to trip over or fall off your bike or that kind of thing. So it doesn't necessarily sit as well with the kind of OCD types who want to control everything.
A very important thing to point out here to this audience. Yeah.
You're not going to, yeah, I say that in kind of tongue in cheek, but that's what a lot of triathletes can, can have tendencies in that direction. I think though, in order that there is one thing we haven't talked about, just worth mentioning briefly, and that there's this kind of emergence maybe of another breed of off-road triathlon, which are these S-Grail kind of gravel triathlons, because obviously gravel racing and gravel riding has gone huge, especially in the US, but like starting to go everywhere. And there are some of these kind of fun gravel triathlons. And I think they have potential to attract triathletes for the crossover, because the gravel riding is typically not quite as technical. They can be longer distances, so there's a lot more crossover from long distance tri, and they might also be a way for triathletes to access a bit of off-road in a more friendly format. It's quite jarring to go from riding a TT bike on a flat road to a full Xterra course, but if you kind of halfway house it with a bit of gravel riding, that might be a way of kind of easing the transition.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Welcome to the cool down, everyone. I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. And I am here with TriDot Master Coach Kathy Hudson for our coach cool down tip. Kathy is very passionate about coaching triathletes and has been a TriDot coach since 2016. And she was newly appointed as a TriDot Master Coach in 2022. Kathy has many superpowers in the triathlon realm, and one of them is her ability to connect with her athletes who range from newbies all the way to Kona qualifiers, and they often have crazy schedules that most people would say triathlon would not typically fit into their lifestyle. Her first career was working for the CIA, and she spent many years living abroad as a result, but she now lives in Waco, Texas, to be closer to her young grandchildren. Kathy holds many certifications, from strength and conditioning to metabolic efficiency training, and her coaching expertise involves sports nutrition and finding balance between triathlon and everything else that life holds, which I know is a huge struggle for many, many athletes. One thing that not many people know about Kathy is that she is bilingual. So Kathy, welcome to the cool down. And you must start off by telling us what other language you speak.
Well, the other language I speak is Spanish. We lived in very many Latin American countries, and I had the opportunity to use the language, and absolutely loved it and still practice it and use it on occasion.
That's great. So you use it now for your family vacations, as opposed to your work-related obligations.
Yes, that is very true. I love foreign language and enjoyed speaking the language, and love it when I have the opportunity to do so here.
Yeah, that's great. So let's get started today with what tip you have for all the triathletes out there.
Well, I think a good tip is really impacts race day. So on race day, we have a plan. And we all know that race days are long, whether you're doing a half Ironman distance or a full Ironman distance. It's a long day. And it's extremely important to understand that during this day, unexpected things are going to happen. And it's extremely important to just, be a problem solver. Okay, I'm going to be a problem solver out there. When something happens, I am going to fix it. And then I'm going to move on. That is going to be your major job. And, unless it's medical, that's what you're going to do. And I have kind of a funny quick story. Had an athlete doing Ironman Florida and it was his first Ironman. And I had, told him that it's going to be a long day. Solve the problem, move on. And he was on his bike, and an 18-wheeler was coming in the other direction. And rock popped up. And the rock hit him in his front teeth.
Oh, no.
He lost his front tooth, and he was on his bike spitting tooth and blood, and hearing my voice in his head going, okay, well, if I stop the race right now, I'm not going to get my tooth back. And he said, I'm just going to just keep going. And so he did. And I was so proud of him. You know, sadly, all of his Ironman finisher pictures are without his front tooth. But, you know, he was still just as proud and as I was of him. So, you know, things like that can happen.
I am sure that that race photo now conjures up this massive amount of confidence and just makes, as you said, makes him feel so proud because he went through pretty adverse conditions to get to that point. And seeing that race photo is just, you know, a testament to how strong he is and how much of a problem solver he is. And I'm so glad that he had your voice in his head at that very moment, because most people would just want to quit, but you must have quite an impression on your athletes if he's able to hear your voice at that moment. That's so cool. I love that.
Thank you. And you know, if I could just add one more little thing, I want athletes to go into a race with a plan A. We talk about, you have plan A, B, C, and D. If you need to go through the entire alphabet to get to the finish line, then that's what you do. And one of my favorite mantras is relentless forward motion. Just keep moving. It doesn't have to be pretty. It may not be how you trained, but just keep moving and try really hard not to let that define you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to tell you what this reminds me of. It sounds like this idea, this notion of problem solving and you have no way to go but forward is what my midwives said to me about giving birth. You have plan A, you have plan B, and you might not even get any of those options, but at the end of it, you end up with an amazing prize, which is your baby. And at the end of an Ironman, or any distance, whatever, it doesn't have to be, you know, a full distance. It could be a sprint for someone who's brand new, or even someone who's, you know, a really advanced athlete and their specialty is a sprint. What you get at the end of that race is the satisfaction of knowing that you've probably accomplished some kind of a goal in order to reach that finish line, whether it be a podium finish or crossing the finish line for the first time or crossing the finish line after having an extreme amount of adversity. And so it's wonderful to know that the experience of that race is going to be something that is going to be memorable regardless of how you got there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My first Ironman, my Garmin stopped working on mile about 42 on the bike. Wasn't part of the plan, but
right.
I just kept going because, you know, what were my choices to stop because I didn't have, you know, the technology. Right. So, you know, yes, just keep going, keep moving on and don't let that problem define you. That truly is the key.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.